Hello, hello. It's Celeste Burke Nicely on the Sales Edge podcast. I have a unicorn with us, a legend, Will Aiken. You made a huge announcement recently about your of this.
The logo, my AI-generated graffiti art logo.
Yeah.
I don't know why I went for all the graffiti as well, because I'm not street. I'm not urban, but I just like color. You can listen to my voice. You can hear more teas and biscuits rather than spray painting graffiti on the wall outside. But it just felt right. I launched willaiken.com.
Tell us about your new venture.
I got tired of reporting to the mat, you know, the mat. For a long time, I've felt like I could do this by myself, and I didn't, because that forever calling, that siren sound of safety, of having a job, it's so tempting. Especially, I've got a young family, I've got two young kids. I'm the breadwinner in my house. It's so easy to just keep doing what you're doing and get paid for it. But I know that the value that I can bring, it will be much more for myself than it would be the salary that I was taking, right? And sure, I loved what I was doing. I loved the job I was doing and the work. And that's a position of luxury if you haven't say that. But I got to do it, you know? I got to take the risk. I got to go all in. And even if I fail, which I probably won't because I won't let myself do that, I can say I did it, right? But I've always had that nag in the back of my head, and it just happened to be the right time. So I went all in, and here we are. And it's going pretty well so far, I won't lie. I mean, launch week, you can get a bunch of support. I've got a ton of great friends in the space who have all been super supportive. I know it's going to probably get harder from here.
Yeah.
It's been overwhelmingly positive so far.
What's interesting, and what I love listeners to take away from this, is you put in the reps ahead of time to build your brand, to build your network, to give back, to build in public, to show what you were doing, so that when you did take that leap, and this is like akin to salespeople is what I'm getting to. akin to salespeople, you can't just get in the seat and start prospecting and think, look, these are going to go in, the shooter's mentality. No, you've got to get in the dirty reps, the practice up front, and build before things stick.
I think that's a really good point, and something that I thought about as well. A lot of business owners, they go out and they create this idea, and then they go and try and build a brand. It took me 2 years to build this brand, and I grew quicker than most because I did some outrageous stuff and had this very little filter, which people seem to like for some reason. Most people don't have as quick of a come up, right? So like, if I was stuck in my business and didn't have any followers today, I'd be dead in the water. You know, I'd already have to be looking for a new job. With my tail tucked between my legs, I obviously wouldn't have made the decision if I didn't have what I have. But
it's tough. Someone asked me that a couple of weeks ago. It was actually Daniel Ryan. You probably know Daniel from Aligned. So
nice.
He was saying, this is so hard for you to build a pipeline because I self-source. I was that person for 20 years in corporate, never thought about my personal brand. I knew everybody in the industry, but not online. And 3 years ago, having to start at 1500 connections on LinkedIn and start building in public. This has been an uphill battle. And he said, what if this doesn't work out? What are you going to do? And I said, Daniel, there is no, it has to. So I will keep going.
It has to. Yeah. I think that's what you just said is pretty darn true and great for an entrepreneurial. It has to. It's like a little chip in your shoulder. You've got something to prove. You can't fail. You won't allow yourself to. But I can tell just from the vibe you give, Celeste, you know, you've got something interesting to say that people would want to listen to. You know what I mean?
Female over, I know I don't look it. I'm 44 with a four-year-old, right?
Left, slay,
left
Celeste.
Corporate after 20 years. And now I'm in my second act. And
you look like younger than I do. I'm 29 with a four-year-old.
You are not 29.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I'm 29. I just forgot to moisturize for all those years of sales. They're not nice to the wrinkles.
Well, and that's what's interesting is this. I think as a salesperson, you also have to have a little bit of the entrepreneurial bug, because you are in a little bit of a silo in a sales role. I heard from a huge company the other day, 500 reps on the team. They get no coaching. There is nothing. They're winging it in the wild, wild west. And if you don't have that little flame inside you that says, I'm competitive, I can do this, this month sucked, next month's going to be better, this is what I'm building, You just go in and collect your paycheck and waiting for the day that you get axed.
Yeah.
How do you think entrepreneurial bug served you as a employee, like a traditional W-2 employee?
It's just total accountability and ownership of everything you do. I kind of hate that word accountability because it's so synonymous with like toxic people who just don't recognize that they've got a ton of privilege. Like me going out there and be like, no excuses. I'm a posh British tall, handsome, very handsome white dude. Come on. Like I can't go out there and be like, you're just making excuses, people. But at the same time, like in sales, that you do need a level of accountability to say, like, I don't want to rely on an SDR. I don't want to rely on marketing. I'm going to go get my own pipeline. I'm going to say, even though that deal wasn't my fault, I lost it. What could I have done differently so I can learn from that next time? You need that. Otherwise, you would just sit there like going, oh, it's not fair. I sound like one of those toxic assholes on like TikTok, like the I won't name anyone, but like the car sales dudes who like, but at the same time, you do need a little bit of that because otherwise you will just end up in this wallowing pit of self-despair, which isn't a fun place to be. I've been there. I was there for many years before I got good, before I read Gap Selling. I remember I was in sales and I was working at this company and I had the worst territory, objectively the worst territory. I know this because I measured it. I took a business case to my manager, like, look at my bad territory. Yeah. And all these other reps were outperforming me, but I was so focused on what they had and what I didn't. I wasn't even focusing what I was bringing to the role anymore, which was very not enough. I wasn't looking at what I was doing to learn on the side, what I could do to make the most of my territory, what people with similar territories was doing to still win. I was so focused on what I didn't have that I was completely blind to the fact that I was not focusing on what I could do. And then I was like, okay, well, if I work for a different company, it'll be different. Mm-hmm. And I went into the interview process with a company and they were like, well, we're looking for someone who's got a sales process. So I Googled sales process and I like read it out on the interview. Like, yeah, I do discovery, which I didn't do. And then I do a demo call after that. And they're like, oh, that's great. And then I asked them, what resources does your team really love? And they're like, Gap Selling. So I knew I had 1 week between the first interview and the second interview. I had to finish Gap Selling so I could keep pretending that I knew what I was doing so I could get this job because the job was the problem. But luckily, in the process of doing that, I got that job. When I got there, I got great coaching and applied a lot of the stuff that I learned from reading that book in a week and then reading it again. And my manager was both Sandler trained and believed in Gap Selling methodologies and a couple other things as well. And then everything got better and I realized, oh my gosh, I was the problem the whole time. I just didn't, you know, like it wasn't the product that I was selling.
Taylor Swift wrote about, right? It's me.
I'm the problem. It's me, right? But like, it took me so long to get to that point. I just wish I had known that early because the moment it will start to make sense, it will start to become easier and actually a lot more fun as well. Instead of wallowing and clocking off and doing the bare minimum, I was excited to go to work. I was excited to talk to clients. I was excited to reach out and prospect and meet new people and keep learning. And then one day I asked for a promotion and I didn't get one. So I acted like a toddler and went and became a content marketer instead. Boo, here I am. Back at it.
Yeah, but he's now back, you're back baby. In sales. Here you are.
Let's do it.
Right? And that's what I love. So I'm all about people who are real and authentic and are like, hey, this shit sucks and it's going to be tough. And this is what why I love Rachel May. She has been like the hardest female coach boss that I've ever had. And I always looked at it as like, it's them. They're so mean. And this time around at age 44, I'm like, oh, she sees my area of opportunity, which is why she's pushing on me so hard. It's why these conversations are so difficult, but I'm learning so much. And it is that simple shift of not why me to the why not me. I can do this because there's something inside of me. And maybe it's like ADD or ADHD or competitive drive or
it's definitely ADHD. I can see it in you. I think that's also like a good thing. It's like a superpower because my dad has that. And like if you saw me and him, you'd be like what's that? You know, like in public, like, whoa, it's a bird, you know, like still like concept stuff. But that in a way is like a superpower. I always find like people who are like that, they manage to make it work. And obviously you've been doing that for such a long time that you've made it something that you can turn into goodness. And I say the same thing about anxiety as well. Even though I definitely have had like crippling anxiety, a certain level of anxiety is a really good thing. Because if you don't have anxiety, just think about this. Not having anxiety is like not worrying, right? You would have no drive.
Yeah.
You're always need Rory
like,
to move.
Little hum of the like.
If I don't do this, then so you need obviously too much can become too much, right?
Oh, and the and a healthy panic amount. Attack is not fun. It is not fun.
No,
to be like
no.
In a bag, and you're like, this is death. This is what death feels
touching,
like.
Touching like ice face. Come on, wake up. It's okay. Touch something solid. You know,
laying on a cold bathroom floor, getting as close to the earth as you can during a panic attack is marvelous.
In the shower, just sat on the floor like.
But as is
a you're describing me at a conference for 3 days.
Panic attacks suck, but I agree that tiny little bit of the buzz of anxiety keeps you. Going. And I'm sure your kids love it too, because you're probably so much fun.
Yeah, I can see it in my son as well. He's definitely got a little bit of whatever I have. But as I said, I can see it most with my father, who still is probably a big role model for me, because he's just always going. What makes him interesting? What makes him fun at a party? What makes him a great business owner? And for so long, I looked up to him. And then recently he came over and he was like, Will, you do realize I almost felt guilty that I wasn't more successful. He's like, Will, you do realize you make more than me now? And I was like, well, Dad, yes, screw you, Dad. No, but like, it was like a moment, like, I was like, whoa. And like, I don't know, for so long, I felt guilty that I hadn't been more successful because of all the things he did for me and the way he set me up for life and stuff. And then hearing that, I was like, oh,
yeah.
Well, now what?
I'm samesies with you, my dad. My dad's 78, so like a lot older than your father. But he's still like, go, 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 go. Works full time, runs a $10 million business that he built from scratch 40 years ago. He does Ironman. He teaches spin class 2 days a week. He's a master swimmer. He's written 3 books. It's just like, set the bar.
He's written 3 books? What on?
Well, he wants me to teach him how to do a podcast. So that's coming when he comes in 2 weeks. Pay it.
I'll teach him how to use Descript.
Tales my patients told me, so it'll be like stories over the years.
Is he a doctor?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, physician. Okay. And another one was he lived in Africa for 3 years, worked for the Canadian government. He's Canadian, so he has pictures and short stories that go along with that. And another one is like short stories about one of his grandchild's like doll, I think. I haven't read it. I'm getting it for Christmas, so we'll see. But he's a great storyteller in that he's then
a
great salesperson by default.
Mm.
I feel like people who are great storytellers, is this what happens in content? You tell a great story and it leads people down a path?
I don't know. People ask me stuff about content, and there's a reason I didn't start a content business. I started a sales business, right? And that's because like, well, why do you do content consulting? Why do you teach companies how to make great content? I'm like, because I don't know how. I just showed up online and decided that I was going to post anything. And that worked. That doesn't mean I can tell everyone to do that. That's not like a universal way to grow. And the reason I made the content was because I had a passion for the thing I was talking about. It's sales. I wouldn't have gone and done the role if Lavender was a selling to marketers company. Because I don't care about marketing. I care about sales. That's what's interesting to me. That's what's fascinating to me. That's what keeps me like going, that's so interesting. There's a reason I will not become a content person. I've noticed this trend in life. There's these people who became successful telling other people how to be successful. And I don't think that counts. Honestly, I'm getting a little bit close to a little bit meta here. But like, if you can only be successful teaching other people how to be successful, then those people can only get successful by doing the same thing you did. There can only be so many success coaches out there. Right. And in the same way, if I was a content creator teaching other people how to create great content, then it doesn't count, if you know what I mean. I don't think that counts. It's like
It's like a doctor never practicing and teaching other doctors how to be a doctor, but you're not in the seat. You don't have hands on the patient. You don't know what it feels like for like a pregnant woman's belly or like the throat, right? The glands that are swollen. Because I just know how to teach being a doctor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. If that doctor had never been a doctor, it doesn't count, right? They don't have the credentials to teach other people how to be a doctor. And this is like part of my imposter syndrome, I suppose, as well. I haven't sold for 2 years now. I need to get back in that seat, make sure I'm still practicing. If I'm going to be teaching other people how to do this, I need to keep touching these things. And yes, there is a certain element of entrepreneurship, which is going to be sales, right? You know this. You've closed clients. You talk to them. You still do the discovery process. You still gap.
You still do deals. Yeah.
And that's what I need to do more. But I'm going to do even more of that. So I'm going to be cold calling live. Oh. I want people to watch me F up. It's going to be brutal. Oh. It's going to be even more anxiety inducing than normal cold calling because I'm going to have an audience watching me. And I'm willing. I don't care if I fail because it's real and it shows that it's not just telling, it's showing as well. And it's anyway.
Yeah.
But both, I made some cold calls the other day and I've kind of missed this adrenaline. It's crazy because I do not enjoy cold calling. I hate it. It's horrible. And let's be real. Anyone who tells you that they do or is either lying or like, cuckoo. But I did it and it gave me a feeling I haven't had in so long of like, it feels good to have butterflies about something. It feels good to be nervous about something. That's a good feeling to have. Because if you don't do that, if you never have that, then you're not challenging yourself. The same thing happened when I do public speaking as well. That's why I love doing that as well. That feeling before you get on stage where you
You're like, I'm going to die. I feel sick.
Yeah,
I can't do this.
That's good, right?
What am I talking about? I've forgotten everything I've ever learned. I can't, no words are coming.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It makes you feel alive though, right? Like that's what, it, without that feeling, then life would be kind of boring. And I realized that. I haven't had that feeling in so long when I started making cold calls a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh, I need to do this more.
Yeah.
I need to do 5-4 more things that make me feel this uneasy, sweaty, clammy hands because
I get it.
You're not doing it.
Rachel and I did some cold calling. She was via Zoom yesterday and you're like, but it is what it is. If you're not practicing, and that's something that, you know, I love, like I was saying, people who are real and authentic, who have time in the seat. I moonlight as helping some companies with their online branding, as well as helping their sales team learn how to prospect on LinkedIn. That's what I started doing. I get asked to speak about it, do workshops. But this summer, when I stepped on stage in front of 350 people, immediately was like, I'm a little kid. I don't know what I'm doing. How am I here? How am I at this conference of 3,000 people? So I don't think that ever goes away, but the awesome part is people see you every day online doing the craft. So you're not just teaching about it, you're actually doing it and you're sharing the misses as well as the wins. And that's a huge part of, I think, people that can resonate with others who are real in the sales seat. Like, are you doing it too? And that's a huge miss from sales organizations who have VPs and CROs who are so far removed from what happens in the day to day.
Yeah.
Just close more deals.
And just close more deals. Do more calls. Make more calls. Send more emails. Have more discovery calls. Just talk to more customers. It will get better.
So I'm curious.
It's like drowning.
Why? You said you love sales. This is your superpower. Why launch this prospecting like that? Why is that your arena?
Why the prospecting thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I would like to talk about all aspects of sales, but, and, you know, I told you about this before we hit record today. I don't feel comfortable. I have what I would consider original ideas when it comes to prospecting, or at least I have enough experience or enough, I've listened and heard and been taught by enough variety of people that I've been able to perform a unique perspective of some kind. I believe what I have to say about prospecting and how to make a cold call and how to send an email and the focus of all these things and how you bring that all together in a message that actually resonates and gets people going from, I'm not looking, to hang on a second, this sounds interesting. I know I have something there that I can say is mine and it's unique. If I was to try and go and do a discovery workshop right now, I feel like it would be too close to something that isn't mine. And I need to still find that. And I'm not sure how that happens. But what I would end up doing is just teaching capstone to people or a crap version of it because I've only, you know, I've never been taught by Keenan. I've read his book 6 times. I've had Sandler training, which has some parallels at least. But like, then I'm only going to be teaching Sandler to people, right? And then at which point they could probably get it for much less from a Sandler franchise near them. You know what I'm saying? So like I call it imposter syndrome or maybe a moral compass that says I shouldn't do that until I have a good reason to do that.
Or you're building it in stages.
Or I'm building it in stages, yeah. I think a lot of people try to do too much as well. If I can nail this first part and I can show that I can sell it and I can get demand and people want it and people care about it, and people say, this was amazing, then that gives me more confidence to do more of it. And that's maybe when I branch out to more yeah. things. But for now, I think there's a real problem out there. I mean, I feel like a lot of the SDR, BDR model for a lot of outbound teams, a lot of account executives now going full cycle, that no one really gets that well. We get so tied up in this vacuum chamber of LinkedIn, this echo chamber, should I call it? It's a vacuum where we assume everyone knows the basics, that not to write long ass emails that are full of pitchy language talking about their solution, how innovative it is, and how it's going to 8 times their pipeline or whatever right. their result, you know? But then you realize that's like a tiny fraction, like the smallest fraction of all the people out there who are actually selling. And it's like normal, it's actually quite a good fraction. Generally, people who are on LinkedIn are people who are probably looking for more places to learn and probably already know. And then you go into a sales team and you look at their emails and it's like, oh, how did this happen? And it's because I believe that like the people at the top don't realize this. Intuitively, when you start in sales and you don't get given the guidance, I told you about my experience in sales when I was making all excuses and blaming my territory. I was making all these mistakes. Intuitively, you think you're meant to show up and pitch. Yeah. You think you're meant to show up and be polite and say that I hope they find you well and ask how are you at the start of your cold calls and
right.
and be like
weather
and make your thing sound good, you know, like that's what we assume. Like, I don't know whether it's the stereotypes or the way we're raised or just like what we think sales is. People just go, that's their default. And you need to have someone come along sometimes and just go, no. Like, I had that like blindfold for me when I actually finally got good training and sales started becoming fun and less of just like a grind and just doing tons of this. Once I started having a process and doing things the right way and asking the right questions and knowing why people show interest and why people buy and why they don't buy. If you don't know any of that, then you just have to kind of wing it, and wing it often is just awful.
Yeah. And I'm seeing that with teams too. It stinks from the get-go of everything. And I think there's this real opportunity for change right now as baby boomers, I hate to say it, as baby boomers exit and new leadership comes into place. We can't continue to do what we've done. You know, the early sales training that I got when I was 27 was definitely banned, and it still freaking exists because my husband showed it to me the other day. Here is your qualification checklist. These are the questions that you need to ask on the first freaking call. And I remember that. From 15, 16, 17 years ago. Cringy. I can't believe we are still in this place.
We assume that people know this by now. But yeah, you and I know it. And half the people I connect with on LinkedIn and who follow me on LinkedIn know it. But that's like 40,000 people. There's like a millions of other people out there who aren't part of that, who don't know that yet, who haven't been shaking like, no! Stop asking them if they have the timeline, budget, and authority to buy. What are you doing? You know?
Or like, what is your role? How big is your team? Like, all the things that you can educate yourself on ahead of time. I had a rep at a huge company tell me the other day, they don't have enough questions to ask to fill up 15 minutes of a discovery call. And I said, okay. I mean, our discoveries are usually 2 or 3 calls, right? I'm so confused. What are you focusing on? And again, very bantish. No, they don't record their sales calls. Nobody's listening to them. They're not getting any training. How do we break this? Because it is still out there. And this is why buyers will say, I prefer a rep-free experience.
Yeah, of course they will. Because they jump on a call with an SDR who goes, Celeste, do you have the budget for this product? They're like, I don't know how much it costs. Can you tell me? No. You get that later. Do you have the need for this? I think so. That's why I want to find out. Can I have a demo? Yes. Yeah, sure. No. That comes later after this call and then a discovery call. And do you have a timeline? Yeah. Soon. Ideally less than 2 calls from. Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. All right. I don't think you're qualified, so I'm not going to introduce you to an account executive. Of course, buyers don't want that. Who would want that? I believe that sales best practices, when done wrong, are bad practices. So a lot of what you teach, a lot of what Keenan talks about, a lot of gap selling, a lot of selling good, solution selling, let's just call it as a branch umbrella, because there's a lot of ways to sell better than that,
yeah,
is asking questions, right? But if you just heard ask questions is how you get good at sales, if you ask the wrong questions, then you're actually going to be probably worse off than just giving the buyer everything they want and just showing a demo. If you're asking bad questions like that, you're just going to annoy people. I believe that every sales best practice, when done the wrong way, is like the worst thing you can do. But I think about like challenging your bias status quo when you do that the wrong way and just tell people they're wrong, you just are like basically being an arrogant douche. Right. But when you do it the right way, you can actually change people's perspective and move their criteria from silly things that they shouldn't be on. But when you do it the wrong way, you just seem like an arrogant asshole who thinks they know better than a C-level executive when realistically you're just a sales rep who's probably not hitting quota, right? Like,
who ideally do you want to work with? If you could have your pick, who is an ideal customer company that you want to go in there and change that behavior?
I sell to anyone who has an actual solution rather than a commodity. I think there's a category of people out there who think they sell a commodity, but don't realize they don't. I think I talk to these people and they're like, well, Will, we don't sell this software that changes the way people do things. I just sell a piece of machinery that goes in a machine that buyers look at the line items this year and try to get the best deal for. I'm like, that can still be something. Mm-hmm. That can still be a solution if you know what the problem is. Because everything, every solution has a problem that it, and people just don't realize it without flipping on its head. The moment I start saying this makes you faster, I'm basically saying you're doing it too slowly today, and that's the problem. And I don't think people think about that enough. I was talking to someone the other day who does outsourced developers in Colombia. They were like, Will, I've got a commodity solution. There's so many people reaching out to people about outsourced developers. I was like, okay, what do you do differently? And they're like, well, we provide convenient, well-educated, and affordable developers. I'm like, okay, slow down. You've almost said it. You're so close. You're this close. Affordable. So what's the problem that solves? The fact that staff today, expensive as heck. And you hire the wrong one, even more expensive. Mm-hmm. Convenient. What's the problem does that solve? The fact that it's really hard to find good developers these days, even harder if you hire the wrong one. Yeah. And all this time, every moment they're not hiring a developer for a founder who's trying to scale their startup or get some funding or has just got some funding, they're burning money all that time. And then they're like, well-educated. Okay, so what's the problem that solves? Like, they're so close to it, but they're so focused on like what's good about it, they don't realize that there's what's wrong with the way that people are doing it today. And that person thought they had a commoditized solution. When I told them that, like, fireworks were like, oh
right,
my
they're
gosh.
Probably like, I'm questioning my whole life right now.
Yeah, like he was like shell shocked, and I was like, because I get those emails about outsourced developers in Colombia, and I've never seen one that said, "Hey, I noticed that you're a founder. A lot of founders struggle with like trying to find people, like trying to find the right people. They know it's too expensive to hire a developer, but they're worried that when they hire someone from Colombia, they're going to be rubbish." But again, they're educated, but right? So like that's when you start find these problems and solutions. And in prospecting, you can only assume when you get to the discovery, the demo and everything like that's where you ask the real good questions to uncover. But the prospecting, you have to make a hypothesis. That's kind of what I'm trying to teach people now.
Love that. I'm super excited to support you. I know that our team is a huge fan of you, not only on your online persona, but that you've arrived at this place of trying to be a change agent of bad behavior. And like you said, it's not a process. Like if a coach teaches you how to run a 5K and they tell you to turn your feet out and you're running with your feet out the whole time, you're not improving, but you still think you're doing the work and you're checking off the box, you're not going to get to that end result because you're probably going to end up in pain and you're going to hurt yourself and you're going to not have poor form, all that stuff. So doing it poorly is probably worse than doing nothing at all, but you're taking this huge risk on yourself in order to amplify this cry for help that is out there, that we have to change what we are doing because something really bad is going to happen. There's going to be a breaking point with companies where...
I would argue it's already been happening for some time now. The one thing I will say that's very frustrating, in this past couple of weeks, I've realized how little a lot of folks actually care about their job, doing it well. How
a little bit louder for those in the back.
Like, I am shocked that, like, they don't, I don't know if it's checked out or burned out or what it might be, but, like, people...
I think it's also a lack of consequence is what I'm finding. But
the consequences are here. We're seeing that. We're seeing these teams, these huge layoffs, these people missing targets.
Right, and but like, the people
it's who become are getting, okay to fail.
The people who are getting laid off are the people who are doing the day-to-day, right?
The ICs.
Correct. So when we're talking, and I've seen it a lot, especially since Saster, is teams win rate of like 10%, whatever, 20% on inbound, right, a close rate. Decline in sales, weak pipeline, like all of these indicators discount one company discounting 100% of the time at 50%. Like, why? But there's no repercussion.
There's no shame.
There's no repercussion. Like, I'm like, you're going to miss your target by 5 million this year. And then, and you're increasing by 40% next year, like on this trajectory. And they're just like, I'll keep going. Like,
it's
just find new people.
Like, there's no shame to it. And I think it's because it's become the norm. It's okay. Everyone's failing, all right? It's not just me. If everyone's failing, it's all right. It's kind of like when you're in the test and you're like, oh, I got a 50, but don't worry.
There'll be a curve.
Bob over there got 44, right. So right. I'm not last.
And there'll probably be like a curve. So really, I got like a 90.
Yeah. It's on a curve. Everyone's failed except for, you know, the one person who's actually doing things right over there. And you're like, they're just lucky. No. Come on, be accountable, be ashamed, want to do better, own your stuff. The things we spoke about earlier, we have to own it at every level of the way. If you're a sales rep, if you're a sales leader, if you're a company founder, if you're an owner, even if you work in marketing,
even if you're
need to own it.
Or a board member.
Own it like it's your house. You would be ashamed if your house had windows falling off and like it was cold inside and your kids were shivering themselves to sleep. This is your life. This is your thing. Own it. Make it yours. Be proud of it.
This is where I take my Yeti and I just drop it.
Damn!
There. See, one of my awards fell.
More energy drinks.
Last question. Because this has been awesome, and I know that we've gone over, is
quite right.
One sales myth you want to bust.
I don't want to upset you.
Go ahead.
All right. I believe that there is, because of the bad work that other sellers have done, the things we mentioned earlier, the bants, the crappy processes that completely make buyers feel like they hate sales, people would never want to talk to them. I believe there is a duty for a lot of sales reps to give in order to get. And I feel like this can smooth things over in a way that shows people that you're not like those other people. And you can ask great questions, sure. And you can be informed and you can have a hypothesis. You can know the root causes and impacts of their problems. But I believe that you can show someone a product on the first call and not mess up your entire sales cycle. And in fact, doing so can speed up your entire sales cycle, because even when you gap sell perfectly and you uncover this massive problem, this root cause, and you know the root cause is so that your solution can come in and is like designed to solve, and the impact is so big that they cannot possibly not change and they will need to buy. And the status quo cannot go on any longer. And you've done all your great work and you've uncovered that. Because of the size of buying teams and the risk aversion, the fact that 10 people need to be involved in like every sale, even when it's like a 5-figure deal, right? Like a 10-gauge deal, they're like, we don't need to involve ops. And it's like, guys, it's $10,000. Like, I could personally spend $10,000. Like, what, you're a million, you're like a $50 million business. Why are you worried? Anyway, regardless, they go, okay, this is all great, but before I involve other people from my team, I want to see it myself. And I believe by just showing them a little bit of the peek behind the kimono, I'm not talking about the whole thing, but like if they've told you that, hey, my problem is this and this, you just go, screen share, bang, bang. Does that look like it solves it? Great. Now we can have that demo and you can feel comfortable inviting all your team. Does that sound fair? Despite the fact what it says in chapter... Let me see. Chapter, the demo, but page one of chapter 11 of Gap Selling of my copy that is not signed by Keenan, it's signed by Rachel, which I would argue is better. I'm okay with giving a demo sooner.
Do you believe if Keenan would have said, at times, a slight peep into the product on the first call is warranted? What do people hear?
Yes.
What do people hear?
They hear every time.
I can demo on the first call. Demo on the first call. Right?
That's permission. Yes. And this is something very true as well, because sales reps who have a process are good. Sales reps who know that their process is going to work most of the time, but there are times where you have to go off process, those are the folks who win. The folks who know
yes.
it's not a one-size-fits-all, and sometimes you deal with someone who's come on who is angry, yeah. who is being treated like dirt, and is like, and you need to sometimes mirror them where they're at a little bit to match them where they're at. Yeah. And that's I think.
Yeah. A fair and thing I think to the say. The differentiation is this is talking about establishing a behavior, a foundation that can then be grown from, because what we've seen, and I'm sure with your clients as well, it is you got to start with the crawl, right? And you're talking yeah. about individuals who are walking and running, who can shift yes. in and out of that. And absolutely, I remember going through my training and seeing the AE that we had at the time on a discovery call say, Keenan's going to kill me for this. And he showed something in relation to the conversation, and it was totally appropriate. But you're talking about someone who is at an elevated status
yeah.
with their skill set. So while I understand that myth, I'm in support with the caveat of.
Yeah. There's a book out there, and we're going to finish off this with the finishing note because we're way over, but I had so much fun last. So aww. Thanks so much for having me on.
Right? It's been such a pleasure. Like such
I just have so much more respect for you now, and I just know you, aww. I mean, you're great anyway. But
likewise.
I've had so much fun. But there's a book out there that I read last year because I set myself a challenge to read like 50 sales books. I didn't hit that goal. I read like 26, which is still quite a lot and still reigns supreme. But the point is, I read a book and it was about selling your way. And I think that can be really good advice for those folks who are running. But I do believe that when you start, you need to have that, like those rails to learn. You earn that right to know when the process is broken. When you start, if you are defiant against the people who are trying to teach you and do know what's best for you, assuming they do know what's best for you, because a lot of managers don't, let's be real, by being a pain in the butt and going, I know better, oh no, I'm going to sell my way, you're actually hurting yourself. But once you've earned that rite of passage, I think that's when you start to see, okay, I've been here before and I know what mm-hmm. mistake I made last time, so now I'm going to change that.
Yeah, agree. It's time in the seat. It's like a parent when your child begins to walk and you're there with like the hands hovering a little bit, right? Like I got these guardrails up, and then you ease into a little bit and they start to move on their own. Have you read this?
The Dip. By Seth Godin. No, but I've read a couple of Seth Godin.
Okay, but look before. How little it is. So small.
Oh, it's such a little book.
So little bitty.
If I had just read books that size last year, I would have hit my goal. But every now and again, the one just hits you with 550 pages.
No, this is like...
Dale Carnegie likes to use the words from the 18th century as well.
No, 70, it's a painful read 75, as well. But I think you and I have been at this time, right? You're at this dip, this point where you want to give up, and it's like... This is when it starts to get good. So every year, this is a good little reminder of like, don't give up. This is the cliff. Like you're almost there. But I do love that. Selling your way. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's a good book for experienced sellers, but I would not recommend it to a new seller yeah. because they would get totally the wrong idea. That one is Sell Without Selling Out by Andy Paul.
Okay. Oh, Andy Paul. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll know. Sales name of the podcast guy.
We've changed yeah. a couple so, of so messages.
I read that and I found myself nodding along going, yeah, yeah, yeah. But if you had given this book to me 2 years ago, you would have screwed me big time. You know what I mean? It's a book for someone who has earned the right to have autonomy, I guess.
I love that. Well, tell us a little, one synopsis. Where can people find you? What are you currently offering? Will Aiken.
Oh, sorry, this is part I sell. Okay, yeah. So my name's Will Aiken. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on TikTok if you're on into that. You can find me on YouTube these days, making woodworking projects, nothing to do with sales.
I saw the desk. It's
Will Aitken.
I saw the desk.
Thank you. Yeah. Still here, and it's still one piece, and it's still flat, which is better than everything else I've made out of wood. My coffee table upstairs is ruined. It's like it's all warped, and there's holes, and the wood. Anyway, but it's Will Aitken. That's Aitken. It's not Atkins. If you call me Will Atkins, I will be personally offended. So there you go. And also, you go to willaitken.com.
Yes.
And buy some dope merch if you're on YouTube right now. Look at this.
Email finds you well.
I hope it's for email finds you well, plus a myriad of other Silly Tales t-shirts.
Well, I loved it. Thank you so much for our time together. Individuals can find you online, follow along with content, and also stay tuned for what you are about to do in 2024, which is give us a little peek behind the curtain of the day in the life of a founder-led sales, right? And what it's like to hear those no's be hung up on, but also share some wins and funny accolades along the way. So thank you so much. It's been a pleasure sharing and learning about your journey. We will see you on LinkedIn.
Thank you.